Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? This is amazing. You're in the right place at the right time. And our lives, they've crossed somehow, magically. We have been brought together, maybe for a reason. And if not, you can figure out the reason when we're done. Make up a reason. It's like poetry. These miscreants who were never alive were naked and were stung exceedingly by gadflies and by hornets that were there. They didn't have skin so soft. These did their faces irrigate with blood, which with their tears commingled, at their feet by the disgusting worms was gathered up. And when to gazing farther I betook me, people I saw on a great river's bank.
Okay.
I think he's asleep. What the heck was that? Shotguns. Those guys are duck hunting.
Where?
Right there, two docks down.
Do they have to do it so close?
I assume they're doing it there because that's where all their duck decoys are.
But they put them there. Why this early and right near our house?
They super need those ducks to be dead. They were probably up all night thinking, hey, those ducks need to die, but they had to wait until light when the ducks come out of their holes.
Ducks don't live in holes.
Burrow ducks do. School this guy, Butch. Why don't you go tell the guys in camouflage holding guns that they woke you up from your nap in your rental property in the salt marsh and they should run home and read a book?
At some point, their duck bloodlust will subside and they'll go back to their poetry and decoupage or whatever they do in the off season.
I'm restless. Anybody want to take a walk?
I'll come with you. I'm not going to nap, I guess.
Let us descend now into the blind world. I shall be first, and thou shalt second be.
How shall I come if thou art afraid? Who art wont to be comfort to my fears?
The anguish of the people who are below here in my face depicts that pity which for terror thou hast taken. Let us go on, for the long way impels us.
Hey, y'all.
Hi.
Hiya.
Did my nephew set y'all up?
I knew we were set up.
I'm sorry.
Did my nephew, take care of you? Get that brickwork done?
Well, we're just staying here.
Oh. I thought you were the man from the house on the corner.
No, we're just renting this place for the weekend.
Well, we're still putting things back together from the hurricane. I'm headed down the creek to get my dock where the hurricane took it.
Yeah, it really caused some damage.
All right. Well, take care.
You too.
A marsh it makes, which has the name Styx, this tristful brooklet, when it has descended down to the foot of the malign gray shores.
Ah, this is so tranquil. There's nothing more serene than a salt marsh.
Unless there's gunshots or a hurricane.
It calms my soul.
Oh my word, what's that? An airboat!
Good Lord!
Parts of the bay are too shallow for motorboats, so it's just canoes and kayaks and airboats. It sounds like a jet engine.
No, it doesn't. It sounds like a prop airplane.
Oh, that's what I meant.
You said jet engine.
Stop it, Butchie.
It sounds exactly like one thing, but you picked something bigger and louder, as if there was a need to exaggerate an already deafening sound.
Soon as the guide and I were in the boat, the antique prow goes on its way, dividing more of the water than 'tis wont with others. While we were running through the dead canal, uprose in front of me one full of mire and said, Who art thou that comest ere the hour? And I to him, Although I come, I stay not.
It
It's relaxing out here on the river.
It is.
I realize it's a bay, but I called it a river. It's connected to a river. It's a body of water. Well, except at low tide, when it's a body of mud and big chunks of house siding.
Yep.
I wonder if this is what our ancestors experienced, canoeing along these shores, looking at all the rental properties and imagining who lives there full time and who comes here only on weekends.
Lou, what's this in the water?
It's a face.
Is it a person down there?
I don't know. Don't succumb to the otherworldly temptation to join it by diving in. Okay, too late.
Professor, is that you? Harty, my boy. Why are you lying on the bottom of the bay?
It is my fate.
Are we breathing underwater?
Because I spent my academic career writing poetry about the salt marsh and poetically longing to become one with it, I am now doomed to spend eternity resting on its muddy bed and gazing through the warped mirror of water at the distant heavens.
Can I help you?
There is no help for me now. I wouldn't mind you looking into getting some of my work published posthumously, though.
I'll try. I don't understand why you're being punished.
It would not be punishment had I meant what I wrote. But I did not actually long to be mingled with the swamp at all. I was exploiting the strange beauty of this place to make my art seem more memorable. And now I get my wish.
I don't know if I understand.
Just make sure you aren't lying to yourself about what you really want, boy.
Okay.
Don't ignore the gnats and the deer flies and the mosquitoes and the shotguns and the airboats.
I won't.
Why are you underwater?
I don't know.
Artie, are you okay? You jumped into the river that's actually a bay.
I thought I saw a face I recognized.
I thought it was a face too, but it was just a piece of wood. Everything is a piece of driftwood. I was once at the mall, and I had a half-hour conversation with who I thought was my high school coach, but it was really a piece of pecky cypress.
That's strange.
Stranger yet, my high school coach's name was Lamont Pecky Cypress. We named our Southern Swamp Rock band after him.
Oh, like Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Who now?
You don't always get what you want, but sometimes you do get what you want. And then, what if you wanted the wrong thing or were lying to yourself?
Oh, that happens sometimes. What if you've lied to yourself about what you want, and then your wish comes true? What if you prayed for something, and then you got it, but it isn't something you really wanted or needed, for example? One time in the 80s, I thought that if I only had some parachute pants, I would be hip and I'd look great. Say, well, what are parachute pants? I don't know what those are. They sound very practical, like something that if I was jumping out of an airplane, I'd have some parachute pants, and maybe I could also wear a flying shirt or the great floating boots. No, it's not like that. What they were is some kind of strange pants made out of a material, I don't know, like that material they use for suit bags or something, the kind you get for free when you buy a suit. And they have zippers on them in strange places, like a zipper on your calf, I guess to keep candy or rare coins or something in there. I don't know what you put in there, half a drumstick. And I wanted those really badly. I thought, I'm going to look good in these. And I got a pair. My wish came true. They were having a sale at, I don't know what it's called. I forget the name of the Checker Queen or something like that. And I went into the store at the mall and I got them. And then I wore them to work and everybody laughed at me. And they said, you look stupid and absurd. And I said, yeah, but I got all these zippers. I wish I had a Captain Kangaroo pocket jacket to go with it. Captain Kangaroo was a children's show host. And he invented the pocket, and he would have they called him Captain Kangaroo because his coat had so many pockets. It's just like the coat of many pockets in the Bible. And in those pockets, he would put, I don't know, like carrots. He would put carrots because he had a friend named Bunny Rabbit,
And he said, I know that I have a bunny rabbit friend, so I need deep pockets, is what they say. And in them, I will keep carrots with the top still on. I had never seen those. As a child, my grandmother would just always go to some store. I don't know whether it's A&P or Pantry Pride or one of them. And they would remove the tops from carrots. So for years, I didn't know that carrots had these tops on them, but I would see them on Captain Kangaroo, and I would think, I want parachute pants. It wasn't really that simple. I think I evolved into thinking that if I looked like everybody else, or I had the most in-style fashion, the most up-to-date, a la mode, that does not mean with ice cream, it means parachute pants, then I will be, you know, accepted. People will like me. And just the opposite happened, because that isn't really what I wanted. Oh, so many times I thought I wanted things. I thought I wanted fame and fortune. And then I became the most famous radio personality ever in the history of the world. And my life just became awful. No, that didn't happen. I don't want that. I say, well, even if you wanted it, you couldn't get it. Well, that's awesome then. I don't want to be the King of England. And it's not going to happen to me. So some things, it doesn't matter. But other things, you can lie to yourself and you might accidentally get them. I've done that. I've entered contests where I really don't want the thing. You say, I don't know what I'm going to do with this tiny bass head. I have a bass amp. I don't know. I guess I could sell it, but I wouldn't. I would just put it in the corner and say, man, I won something, but I don't want it, really. I remember one time a radio station was having a contest. And I phoned up and I said, Nick Lowe, which was the answer. And they said, all right, you have won this, I don't know, Encyclopedia of Rock and Roll book that isn't really encyclopedic. It's just tiny. And I was like, you know what? I'm not coming all the way down to P90X or whatever your radio station is and pick that up. I don't want it. I thought I wanted it. And now I've deprived someone else of it. I wonder how many times I've done that. I've wished for something. A lot of people go to the store and they'll go see Santa there. Now Santa's there year-round, I understand, in a little office. They were having him out in a throne. And he was like, you know what? I don't feel comfortable in the throne. That's ostentatious. I don't like that. I'm going to just get a little office and people just can come make an appointment and come see me. It's better with an appointment. There's long. It avoids the long lines. Or what they have in England is even worse, are queues. And those are even longer. So you don't have to do that line up or queue up or chalk up your queue or anything like that. You can just make an appointment with saying, you go in, you say, I would like such and such for Christmas. And he said, you're going to have to be way more specific than such and such, because that's the product name of a lot of things. Such and such pancake maker? No, I don't want that. I once received a gift from a friend, and it was a make-your-own fortune cookie set. And it was a little pan. You pour the batter in this thing, and it presses it into a circle. And then while it's still warm or something, you put one of the pieces of paper in it. This is the only recipe I know that says jam a piece of paper into it, into the cookie. And you put the piece of paper into the cookie, and then it shows you how to fold it. It's just like origami. It's extremely easy to fold a soft fortune cookie. And then you have these fortune cookies. And if you have a party, so I'm going to have a theme party. What is your theme? American food. Great, because that's an American food. And everyone will have a fortune cookie and open it up. Sometimes I like to combine them with poppers. I don't know if you, is that what they call them? They're these things, I don't know what they, there's another, crackers is what the British call them, crackers, but we're already using that word. So say, hey, I'm having a big holiday party and there'll be crackers there. Of course there were, it's in North Florida. And, but we call them poppers then, but then poppers is something else too. I know, exactly. I don't know what to call them anymore. It's not accurate. But what I'm talking about, the things that are, they're made out of paper and you pull the tabs out of them and they go, or they explode. The better ones explode. We would empty like a whole M80 in there and then you, and it blows up. And so I did this with the fortune cookies. I thought when they open them up, there'll be a little explosion and the fortune will blow out of there. And that didn't work out real well. First of all, I found out that a lot of gunpowder is not edible, even though it seems to be made from natural things. I made my own. And how did I find out? Well, there's a Star Trek episode where Captain Kirk goes to a planet, and he's fighting the Gorg or Gorfon or Gorf or something. It's a big lizard man. And he doesn't have any weapons. A lot of times when aliens are pitting two species against one another in a sort of combat, all right, they'll put them down like gladiators, they won't give them any weapons. And they'll say, you can only use what you find. That's pretty neat, right? So what Captain Kirk thought is, well, I have a chemistry degree. I will make gunpowder out of just things I find that I can just scrape them from the rock. So we found all the components of gunpowder, sulfur, manganoidal, and such. And then many made, I guess, a gun. I don't know what kind of gun. Maybe a gun, maybe a bomb. I don't remember that episode so well. It's so funny. These things, they're such a big part of your life for so many years, and then they fade away, and you forget them. It's a little like the Bible. So I remember all these Bible stories that guided me in my youth. Now I can't remember any of them. Well, you know, and then I do confuse them with Star Trek episodes. For instance, there's that wonderful episode where, again, an alien wants to have a gladiator tournament, and so he takes Spock and Kirk, and he said, I'm going to team you up with Abraham Lincoln and whatever the Vulcan equivalent of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of some famous figure. Maybe, I don't know, not George Burns, Gandhi. And you're gonna fight like Space Hitler, Genghis Khan, and a lady who did something horrible, I don't remember, on this planet, using only your wits. And so that was a tremendous episode, and that really taught me more. That and some Harlem Globetrotters cartoons taught me a lot about morality when I was young and what I really valued. Do I want to win a space gladiator tournament? Is that what I really want? Do I want to be a leader like Kirk, whose name means church? Isn't that interesting? Everything on that is symbolic. Spock. They didn't just pick that name. There was a Dr. Spock who was a baby doctor. He wasn't a baby who was a doctor. He was a doctor of babies. I know, Baby Driver, I got confused like that. He was a driver of babies. That was a movie about somebody who drove babies around. My grandmother did that. She was a nursery school teacher for a while, and she would pick up the children in an old-timey, wasn't old-timey at the time, station wagon. It was probably a modern station wagon. And she had an auto accident. Now, none of the children were hurt, but my grandmother, I guess they didn't have seatbelts at the time, or they just went around your waist. And my grandmother hit the metal steering rod and knocked all of her teeth out. Isn't that horrifying? That's what you get for trying to drive children to school. That's one of the costs. And maybe you wished for that. But you never know how your dreams, how your wishes, how your prayers will be answered. And if you're lying to yourself, well, there you go. Why would I lie to Santa? Why would I bother to go to the mall, get to the mall, and they say, Santa, this is what I want. This is what I want. I want fame. I want praise. I want people to like all of my social media posts. I want to get a big accomplishment, where they're going to see my name in the papers. Then everybody will know. Then everybody will love me. Nobody is going to love you who didn't already love you. Nobody is going to respect you who didn't already respect you. That kind of attention isn't always what you're looking for. Oh, my goodness. You're being brainwashed a little bit. It's difficult. You know, I was watching the other day, I was watching some documentaries about the mafia. And a lot of times, your average hitman would say is like, I was a little kid minding my own business, and I had this uncle who was a gangster, and I really loved my uncle, and I wanted to be accepted. And he picked me up one day and said, hey, we're going to go do some gangstering. And I was all excited to be accepted by the grown-ups. And so I started to just do whatever he wanted. Now, that doesn't seem sinister, does it? It just seems like you're in an environment, you want to be loved, you're obeying the commandment to respect your elders, right, or to honor your mother and father, and here you are becoming a mafia hitman just because you want to have a sense of community or something like that. And they say, yes, you have to do certain things for your family. I mean, I guess that could happen in your country too. Say, yes, I'm going to go kill some strangers for my country. It seems fine. And maybe it is fine. And maybe it is fine to be a mafia hitman. Who knows? But you know, sometimes what your wish is just to be loved. And you're just getting there the wrong way because you're surrounded by a culture that's telling you, this is how you get love. This is how you get respect. Oh, would I rather be alone and unloved and know that I have not harmed anyone than be full of pride and all famous too, and know that there's a price for my fame, for my fame. We have stood upon the river because there's no water in it. I am standing on the muddy bottom of a swamp where there was none. Now, I don't know where I'm going with that. I like that song. It just came up from my heart. It was there, like the parachute pants. What did you do with those parachute pants? They took them back at the store because it had been only like a day. I was quick to recognize my mistake. And I said, can I have my old pants back? And they said, we never got them. There's doesn't work that way. But we'll give you your money back or some store credit. Well, I guess I could use some turquoise jewelry. I say turquoise back then. But now I say turquoise. I guess because I'm more sophisticated. I don't know. I've changed so much since those old days. That mall isn't even really there anymore. Is anybody's mall of their youth still there anymore? They disappear, these places that we thought would never go away. So I wish to be a big deal at the mall. So now you have your wish. But the mall is gone, and I'm living in an abandoned mall. Ha 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 ha. See? You got to be careful. Fate is a trickster. It isn't really. It's just that we're all idiots, I think. And we're all wishing for things that we think will give us happiness. But what will give us happiness? I'll tell you how I've gotten it recently. Just be in pain for a while. Have something physically wrong with you. Or be afraid of something physical that's going on with you. And then have it subside. Either briefly or temporarily for good, whatever. We never know if something's forever, right? That's what I say. Oh, it's gone for good. Is it, though? But be in pain or be in discomfort or be in a situation you don't like and then not be in it, and you'll say, oh, wow, this is great. Maybe I don't need all that fancy stuff. Who needs a fancy meal? All I wanted was a little bit of relief from my suffering. All I wanted was not to be tormented. Oh, yes, that's different than wanting to rise up and be king or queen of everything. Is that even enough? I don't want that. I experienced that briefly as a child. What I would do, and I've confessed this before, although it's not much of a confession. Do you lie and confess? If you have confession in your tradition, do you lie? So I make things up because my real sins are really pretty graphic. But I don't want to, you know, pretend that I'm not sinful. So I make things up and say, you know, I stole some gum and killed the clerk. I don't know what your tradition is. Maybe who knows who's sitting over there? I would like that. I would like kind of a confessional situation where it's not clergy in the other. You just randomly get somebody and you tell them what you think you've done wrong and just have some random person tell you, okay, that sounds awful or that doesn't sound good. And then they give you some suggestion like, All right, well, you shouldn't have lied to the mailman, so have some soup and read Faulkner. Say, okay, that sounds good. Will that help me? Why wouldn't it? I would sit in my room as a child, and I had stuffed animals around me, all sorts of types. One was a monkey. One was a lamb. All, maybe they were all animals. I don't know. Some of them I don't think were. I doubt there was a clown. I was never that type of child. But I did have these bears, I guess. The monkey was bigger than the bear. I do remember that, which is, I don't know that that's true in real life, although there are some monkeys that are smaller or bigger than a small bear. Koala, gorilla. Beloved old cartoon. And I would sit there in my room, and I would pretend that I was the king, and these were my attendants. And I would sit there, and I would say, oh, ye attendants, I am thy king. Anointeth my feet with oil. But see, I didn't really want oil on my feet. And once there was oil on my feet, I was like, get this off. And they say, how? How are we going to get it off? And I said, I don't know, dishwashing detergent? And they said, sire, you are soaking in it. And I said, that's good, because my feet are greasy. No longer. It cuts grease. It takes them away. What's the equivalent? What can I soak in, Hardy, that will remove this greasy residue, this oil that I didn't want on me? I thought I wanted to be anointed in it. I thought I'd be covered with it. Someone said it'd be a good idea to pour a whole bottle of cooking oil over me. Now what have I done? What have I done? How can I remove it? And I said, well, paper towel? They said, no, paper towels is not going to do it. I must, what's the opposite of oil? I said, water. They said, so if I have oil on me and I get in water, then it should go away. I go, no, no, that's not, I don't think what you want is the opposite. You want something that will insinuate itself into the situation and gently separate you from this thing that is covering that. You want it on you, your culture, that you thought was going to bring you joy if you obeyed those rules or did those things. It seems like all the people who are happy have fancy cars or big houses, or maybe they have, they're well known, their book is being published. I have stories to tell, I'm sure you do, but I feel like I'm not, my book is not being published, or they never will, or anything. Am I not good enough? Oh, you are. You are. What makes you think everybody has to publish a book or something? First of all, two things to remember. Go, and you can do this experiment. This is an easy experiment. Go to the bookstore and pick a book randomly. And there is, I think, a very high percentage chance that it'll suck completely. It'll just like, why did anybody write this? Go, there you go. I know. And then imagine this, that humans existed for a long time without books. Didn't they write things on parchment and all? Some did. Didn't they carve things into stone? Some did. You know what they used to mostly carve into stone, though? Like shipping lists. Say, oh, this is a jar of olive oil or garum. How many jars, how many clay jars of garum are there? But not always did they tell a story or write a novel. And yet, they told each other stories. They shared their poetry with each other. They connected in a smaller way. If you share something of yours from the heart, something magical, some art, with one or two people, that can be just as amazing as sharing it with a huge group of strangers. You can't possibly know all their hearts, all their feelings. And you say, well, the more that love me, the more loved I am, the better I am. The more people who love me and know me, then the better I am, the more okay I am. How can I be anybody in obscurity? I only exist vis-a-vis others. So the more who know me, the larger I am. Is that right? Well, someday you will be as large as Lincoln. A giant Lincoln came walking into our campground one time. He was 30 feet tall. And I said, oh, great Lincoln, look at you. And he said, yes, And I couldn't think of anything else to say to Lincoln. You get all tongue-tied. And I said, you know, you're such a hero. Look at you. You loom large like that. And he goes, oh, yes, but I am a target. My life is not my own. I had great ambition, and I wanted to do great things. But I've made so many enemies, and I have experienced so much tragedy. And though everyone knows me and my face shines upon this copper round in your hand. How'd you know I was holding a penny? I'm Lincoln. I see y'all. And although you have that, I perished at a relatively young age out of a life of tragedy or tragedy or tragedy or tragedy where we, it depends. I was from Kentucky and then we moved to Illinois. And then they say tragedy, you know. I said, Lincoln, you're making no sense. And he said, because when we grow this large, our minds dissipate. They are no longer the size they are supposed to be. I am too big for this world. You don't want to be Lincoln. You don't want to be the incredible gargantuan man. You will no longer fit in your beloved house. You say, I want to be huge. And then you are huge and no longer can you enter the homes of your friends. No longer can you enter the mall of your childhood. You have gotten your wish, but at what cost? Oh, Hardy, it's very easy to talk about Santa Claus in an office and giant Lincolns in the wilderness. But what does it mean for my life? Well, I know a lot of you have great anxiety and fear and sadness about your life sometimes, about your struggles. You say, I feel I can't be great because I'm just getting by. All I can do is survive. I can barely do that. If I don't go to my job tomorrow, everything falls apart. I got no time to be great. How am I going to do that? There's this idea that I can, between jobs and everything, before I go to bed when I get home, I can go to the cafe and write my fantasy novel series. And that if I just hold on long enough, it's all going to work out. And I will be the most popular children's author in the world. And they'll be making all these things into movies. And then I'll get into Twitter wars with obscure politicians and things like that. I can't wait. You know, how am I going to do that? Because I'm tired when I get home, Hardy. Well, who's making you feel like you got to do all these things? Who is that? You know, I there's a lot of pressure coming from outside. Don't let it come from inside. I had that. I was in therapy one time, and I said, oh, I got all this, that, and the other thing. And the therapist stopped me, and he goes, the phone call is coming from inside the house. And I said, what do you mean? That's like a horror movie thing. And he said, yes, you think all of that stuff is happening to you, but really it's all coming from inside your head, your discontent, a lot of it, because other people are telling you what contentment is. And I'm telling you, some of what you need, you have. You know, that's hard to... Not everything. You might need physical, mental healing. You know, you're not going to be able to think positively out of loss or anything. What I'm just suggesting is, you know, stop wanting things that are really the desires of others and not yours. I'm just advocating getting those voices out of your head, and you can become the voice in your head. And then you will have a true kingdom, the kingdom of your own brain. Once upon a time, there was a tiny king who lived in my ear, and he could get so tiny that he could go into my brain area, shrink himself down to the size of a synapse, and bounce around my memories like that. And so he would visit different memories that I had, memories of my childhood. That tiny king showed up one time when I was putting playing cards in the spoke of my bicycle using a laundry pin. Is that what they call them? Yes. You know what I'm talking about. The pin, clothespin. I know what what you were saying? You said laundry. I said laundry because you use it on laundry. Clothes are always clothes, but sometimes clothes are laundry.
Yes.
Isn't that, what is that from? That's from Lewis Carroll, right?
No.
How is a raven like a dry cleaning surface? Service.
Or surface?
It isn't.
It is not.
All right. The tiny king would go into my memories and he would show up in my childhood at various times. And I say, you were not here originally. He said, I know. I came in later. I came in later to let you know that this is your memory, that nobody can go back in time and take it away from you. You are the tiny king in your head. Oh, my friends, I want to be your friend. How can you help me, Hardy? Well, maybe I can, I don't know, maybe I can recommend you to somebody. I was at the beach recently. No, it wasn't the beach. It was more like a salt marsh in North Florida. And I was walking around these houses. Some people live there full time. Some people rent them out because it's a beautiful. It's on the bay there near St. Mark's. And it was called Live Oak Island is where I was. And I'm walking around there. And a gentleman walks up and he says, did my nephew Zach set you up? And I said, with what? And he said, all that brickwork for you. And I wanted him to like me. So I almost said, yes, thank you very much. But I thought I better tell the truth and said, I think maybe, I said, I just renting that house right there. And he said, oh, I thought you were the old guy down the street. As an aside, I later saw the old man who did not have a beard and was like 80. And I thought, wow, the first thing he thought when he saw me was old man. Isn't that crazy? Even though I didn't look like the other old man, I guess he just made that note and said, old man, I wonder if that's the old man down the street. So I said, no, you've mistaken me for someone else. But then it was a wonderful opportunity to have a conversation with a stranger. It was like seeing another human being in a place where there weren't a lot of human beings and you couldn't just pass by. You had to engage that other person. And we talked for a while about the hurricane. We talked about nature. We talked about the ducks. We talked about the water. We talked about the swamp marsh. And it was a beautiful thing. And we were engaged there. And we were talking and nobody was trying to impress the other. He didn't know who I am. I didn't know who he was. It was enough that we were both human beings in the salt marsh. The ducks knew one another. There's buffhead ducks. Buffhead. I just like to say it. Buffhead. There were all sorts of creatures. I saw dolphins in the bay. And the dolphins like to herd the fish. They take the fish and they scare them into shallow water, right? And then when they all got them trapped in the shallow water, they go in there and eat some fish. How about that? It's much like when we go to a seafood restaurant and they herd the server will herd the red snapper onto a plate and then herd those plates onto your table. And once you have the dead blackened or grilled, we'll do it any way you want, snapper, there you go, you can eat. And the dolphins need to eat, and they need to eat the fish. And even though we like the fish, they need to eat it. I was looking down at a creek from the deck that I was standing on, and I saw a dead fish float by, a rather large dead fish. And as it slowly floated by as the tide came in, I saw it kind of twitching. And I thought, maybe that fish is not completely dead yet. And I looked more carefully to see if it was still in its death throes. And I saw that the twitching came from its facial nasal area. And then I realized that gripped to the lips of this fish was a crab. And the crab was sort of struggling to capture this fish, which was many, many times the size of the crab. Now, I don't know if the crab was just having a snack and say, I'm going to just stop this fish. eat its lips off and then be on my way, but it looked to me like the crab was trying to take this enormous fish back to its crab place. What do you call it? Crab shack. That's what it is. And he struggled with this for a long time and hung on and was sort of fighting against the current, grabbing this dead fish by the lips. And it reminded me of the Ernest Hemingway story, An Old Man in the Sea, where the old man is trying to get this big old fish, and which is really, I guess it's a giant shark or something, or I don't know what it was, I forget, swordfish maybe, something, into the boat. But the fish is just, it's too large. And, you know, he never had any business catching a fish that big to begin with. And the rope rips up his hands, and as he gets the fish halfway in the boats, other things start to eat it, and it turns out to be a terrible decision. He didn't need this fish, this giant fish. And that crab, he's wasting his time. But the crab, finally, I guess it came to its senses, and it let go of the fish, or maybe it just let go at a chance, or it couldn't hold on to the fish anymore. I hope that it got a little piece of lip flesh, fish lip flesh, from that dead fish to take back. I hope that the crab didn't come away from that with nothing. You know? But often we have these giant dreams that are really holding us down because they're other people's dreams or desires. And maybe ours are more simple. When we break away from all those chattering, nattering, chattered, matting crowd noises, and we're alone with our head sometimes, like let's say in the forest, you say, I have a strange feeling of contentment that has come upon me, even with the things that I know are wrong, or I feel okay for a minute. Why is that? Because there's nothing shouting at you. Because there's nothing telling you what to do, what to think, what to want. You need to want this. You need to want that. It's so confusing. I'm in agony. Oh, no, I'm being manipulated. From the outside, it's telling me all these things to be afraid of, too. Oh, I can hardly exist. And some of those things are real. Oh, I feel all the agony and frustration of all the injustice all over the world. How do I live my life? Well, I tell you, you're not going to live it in a very helpful way if you're weighed down by all that. Just being crushed is not going to do it. I need to find some reasons to do things. And a lot of times, I need something beautiful or inspiring to keep me going. The dread, the fear is not enough. And that's where I look to art and things to make a little bit of sense out of it, to show me something, to hold up a little mirror, hold up a little picture, and remind me of the beauty, or remind me where I can get what I need for free. For free. And just because something is free doesn't mean it's worthless. The most amazing things are free. Now, we don't want to let people know that we need them or desire them because they'll start charging us for them. Oh, there's this idea that if others are deprived of something that we win. How can that be? Is there not a game where we all can win? There has to be winners and losers. Yes, in games. But is everything a game? And who's to say who wins and who loses in the long run? As individuals, we do both, don't we? But is dying losing? Is money winning? Who knows? It's these words. Words, I'm surrounded by them, swimming in my head. I can't identify exactly where they came from. Why is my professor lying in the swamp, looking up at me, accusing me? I have to think about that. I don't know. These dreams that we have, that we're haunted by, where do they come from? Where do they come from in the brain? This sense of time, is it just my brain? Are things really doing that? I was reading a brain book. I like to read brain books. I don't know that they really tell me anything, but I found out that you can damage the part of your brain that allows you to perceive motion. So this woman damaged the part of her brain. So when she was looking, for instance, at a, I'll go find the book shortly to tell you what it is. So I don't want to steal somebody's uncredited book idea. Do I? I'll just tell you. I'll tell you later. I will credit the book eventually. It's just not at hand. I'm not trying to. I got it from a book about, a popular book about brain stuff. So I'll go look it up. And it isn't Oliver Sacks. And this woman damaged her brain so she couldn't see motion. And so for instance, if somebody was pouring water, she would just see it just look like an icicle. And if a car was going by, it was just like a series of snapshots. She couldn't see how fast something was going because she lost that ability to connect all those things together, to see the flow of time. And you think, gosh, if that's just a part of my brain, if my perception is such a huge part of the universe I live in, what is its true essence? And does that even affect me? Or is it all just about what I see? Can I trick myself into seeing the world I want to live in? I don't know. For a while, until reality creeps up on you, like a shotgun blast in the distance, like an airboat disrupting your tranquility that you have made. And you thought you had control over it, and you thought you were controlling all the noises in the swamp. But it turns out it's just a coincidence. You had to be there, it happened to be there at a quiet time, and now it's no longer quiet. The world does its thing. How do I figure it out in the midst of all this? Maybe I don't. Maybe I just run to where I feel some contentment and love. Oh, come to me. Hardy White, I will come and sit by you. Thank you. Do you have any answers? No, I do not. What do you have? Anything you can give me? No. Any good ideas? Not really. Any money? No. What good are you as a friend? I don't know yet. But make it be like one of those adventure games where you pick it up and then you find out later if you need it. There was a children's story where this guy's going to confront a witch. And the person, before he goes, the person says, okay, you're going to need a couple things. This old piece of meat and a rope and a comb. And maybe there was grease or something. I don't know, something like that. But he needed all those things eventually because he needed to get to the witch. He needed to toss some meat to her guard dogs. He needed the rope to climb up the stairs that she had greased. Oh, it was her. She had the grease. He needed to convince her that he was a friend by giving her a comb for her tangled hair. And then it was only then that he was able to accomplish his mission. But he had been carrying the comb and the rope and the piece of meat around for a while. That meat could not have been in good condition, is what I'm thinking. But take what's offered to you, and maybe it'll be handy later. We don't know. I always take a hanky with me, because I don't know when I'm going to need a hanky. But I'm glad I have my hanky when I do need it. Now, I have gone to bed and taken a clean hanky out of my pocket, and I didn't even have to use it that day. It must have been a good day. I call my hanky AK. I didn't have to use it. And I saw my name on a blimp. It says, Hardy White! Up there. I'd like to see that a little bit, maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. But I'm not going to get my family to love me suddenly. Let's say family that I'm estranged from. They're not going to see my name in the headlines and suddenly think, oh, I guess we should have loved him all along. They're not going to go back in time and suddenly love me as a child when I needed it most. Who cares what they think? And if they think I'm a failure and they think I have nothing to offer, well, that's too bad. That's too bad. Because somebody else might. Do you know that I have come on the radio week after week for years? And the only thing I'm really saying is that, you know, I love you. Because you're a human being, and I'm a human being, and I know that all the things that we can go through, how difficult they are. And so I understand that. I understand our sameness. And I will share my weaknesses and fears with you, and maybe that will make you feel less alone. And that is all I have said consistently. Everything else I've made up and been silly about. Everything else I have lied about. Except that. And you think, well, that's not very much. What is that at all? But I hear from people who say, I needed that when you gave it to me. Isn't that interesting? So, like, you think you might not need a small, stiff piece of cardboard until you spill some sugar. And then you say, wow, really, a small, stiff piece of cardboard is the only thing that's going to get this job done. And that's what I want to be. Just some little nothing that you realize later is probably the one thing that you did need, maybe. And all I had to do was set aside my pride. Not be afraid to be embarrassed. Not be afraid to get the scorn of those who were never going to respect me anyway. To get the love of those who were never going to love me anyway. So I've got nothing to lose. I've got nothing to lose. And if I say something that makes me unmarketable, oh, that's wonderful. I don't care. Because I know that when I go to the produce market, sometimes it's the fruit that has the blemish. It's the vegetables that have a strange shape or a blemish that are the best ones. You can't go by appearances. And this trend to make all tomatoes look perfect and round and red is foolish. What you are doing is depriving yourself of the taste of the odd-shaped tomato, the oddly colored tomato, the strangely blemished fruit that can be way sweeter than the ones that everybody thinks look like a perfect peach. So I hope that I've given you something that you can use. I hope that when you make wishes, that you now know a little more what you're wishing for. And so when you do get it, you won't feel foolish or you won't feel cursed. Oh, my word, there's so much that can happen to us anyway. Let's not do it to one another or ourselves. I want to be your ally. Whatever it takes, I'll stick with you. We'll be together here. We'll see what happens. And we'll be friends. And I'd be wonderful. Little children know that. I say, oh, another little child. I recognize you're kind of helpless over there. I'm helpless. I don't know what's going on. Let's be friends. Let's be friends. They don't know enough not to. They got to be told not to. So you wonder when that happens. When you start getting propagandized away from feeling kinship and friendship with other creatures. I don't know when it happens. But I'd like to rectify a little of that. I would like to feel that closeness with you, that kinship, even if we never meet, even if we never talk. I know that if I open my heart and you receive something from it, that it might help you, or it might not. But it certainly won't burden you. You can just throw it away. Like when someone hands you a pamphlet on the street, there's a couple things you can do. You can go, no, I'm good, and say no to the pamphlet. You can take the pamphlet and stick it in your pocket and throw it away later. Or you can take the pamphlet and read it. And then throw it away. Or you can take the pamphlet and read it and then call the number on it and say, I'd like to get some pamphlets to give out. All right. Fantastic. But it's for a restaurant. Okay. You still want them? I don't know. But I enjoyed the way that you were having an excuse to interact with people because you were giving something out. I wish I could do that. I wish I could just have some excuse to talk to others, to make connections, but I've got nothing. If I was handing something out, I would at least have that. That would be an excuse. Like working at a store. I think some people do it because they're lonely. So I like people. You just want to have somebody that's forced to talk to you. That's nothing wrong with that. I think a lot of people that you hire to fix your stuff in your house are like that. Because I've gotten into some long conversations. I don't know. It also probably has something to do with charging by the hour. But I've hired people to come over and say, I'll fix that for you. And then we get in a long conversation about banjos. This is not terrible. But I could see, maybe that person is doing that job because they want to talk about banjos. Friends, if you have been listening to this show, and I think maybe you have, and now you've made it almost to the end of the show, I would like to remind you that there is no end to radio. It just keeps going on, and something different will happen now. Just the way when lives end, you say, what will we do now that my favorite recording artist is gone from the world? Oh, there will be other recording artists, and they're alive right now. But someday they too will perish. So enjoy that tree before it falls to the ground. Enjoy that stream before it dries up. And be good to yourself and your own heart. Be gentle with you. All right? Unless you need to kick your butt a little bit. But generally people overdo it, I think, with the self-torture. A lot of times. Who knows? I don't know what's wrong. I have no answers. I'm just stalling to keep you with me. Because that's all I can think is worth it. Is that we do it together. I know that we're connected deeply. I just am not. I'm not God. And I'm not the only thing alive. I'm one of many, 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 many. And your brain's very similar to mine. And I'm very similar to all the creatures. So I guess that's what I want to say. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, New York, and online worldwide at WFMU.org. Can you believe it? Can you believe that my voice is traveling through the ether like that? Here it comes. Here comes my voice at you. Through walls, through bridges, through water, through rock, through a cave in the ground. Can you get it? No, I cannot get WFMU in my cave. Really? No, I can't. Do you have Wi-Fi? I've got Wi-Fi in the cave. Well, like I said, you can listen online. So go ahead and do it that way. All right. But if you have access to terrestrial radio, is that like lunar radio? It is not like lunar radio. Is it like Venusian radio? A little bit. Actually, a little bit it is. A little bit. Have you listened to Venusian radio? I have not. Oh, they got Gene Shepard. I think Gene Shepard is from Earth. Is he, though? I'm pretty sure. All right, who am I thinking of? I don't know. Somebody on Venus. Again, I don't remember. Name some radio guys from Venus. They could be women too. I don't know, they have to be guys or no? Oh gosh. There was a woman that had a really good jazz show. I can't remember her name. I think she's local. Anyway, I'm so glad that you joined me. And there's a bunch of holidays coming up. So the next time I talk to you, we'll be in the middle of one of them. So enjoy them all. And I'll see you again next week.